Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that combines our love of football and very average Sunday league playing experiences with our knowledge of football statistics and data analytics. This is episode 32 and it's been something of a busy week for football. My name is Ryan Bailey and joining me is my good friend Mark Carey. Mark, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, mate. Always good to record a new podcast with you. We've got an exciting one lined up. And as you said at the start, it's been a busy one these past few days.
It might be something of an understatement to call it a busy one. I think we should start off by saying that if anyone doesn't know what's happened in the last 5 days in the football world, then... everyone does. I don't even know why I'm trying to caveat that. But I think it's important to say that we're going to stay in our ballpark here, aren't we? And we're not going to have a full-on discussion about the massive elephant in the room, which is the European Super League. But we've got to slightly comment on about how ridiculous this week has been, haven't we, I guess?
Yeah, it's been very odd. I mean, from my perspective, obviously, as a data analyst, I talk about football all the time. And it's funny that because European Super League has dominated the footballing world over the past few days, my role has become not redundant, but has become a lot quieter because you can't have a data analytics perspective on the European Super League, hence why we're not going to spend the rest of this episode talking about it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's just funny that I've been managing to sort of crack on with other stuff and maybe get ahead in other domains because I can pass no comment from a data perspective on this. But it's been very odd, yeah. And I think with this... again, my opinion is the same as everyone else's, I'm sure. And what's already been said, I totally agree with from the fans' perspective, pundits and footballers' perspective. So there's no point in me saying anything else because it's nothing new. But it's just a bit manic, isn't it?
It's a hard, cold fact, which is something we like to deal in, that it was an absolute shambles from start to finish. I think, so basically it was Tuesday evening and... there'd been 2 days of furore. And I remember I took an hour and a half away from my phone around 9 o'clock, I think, on Tuesday evening during the Chelsea game. And I came back to the absolute collapse. I came back on social media. And prior to that, there'd been whisperings that Chelsea were dropping out. And my favourite thing was that it was like a domino, wasn't it? It was like an absolute domino. And all of a sudden, statement after statement were flying. Sheepish looking... rich owner after sheepish looking rich owner were coming out with crap statements but apologizing at the same time. I've never experienced anything like it, I don't think, and I think that's something I'll take away from it. Is the I think this is going to be a long memory, isn't it? I think this will be a big deal for a long time, and it's going to take an awful lot for the backlash of this to sort of calm down. And it'll be a kind of, do you remember 30 years ago when they proposed the European Super League and the world went mad? And yeah, I think we were there, Mark, to experience it, I guess, is the only take home I've got from it.
True. And I almost don't want it to die down now, just because there's been a defeat and they've all sheepishly gone away, as you say. It's not, they've quietened down, but they've not gone away. And I still think that they have this agenda to you know, monopolize football almost. So just because we as the fans have won in the short term, it's almost like we've won this fight, but they still, there's a war still raging in the long term.
Yeah.
So I still think everyone does need to kind of double down and make sure that these billionaires don't just get their way eventually. But yeah, I just think this is a funny one, because we were, and it's fine to share with the listeners, that we were going to record on Monday and we were speaking over the weekend and obviously on Sunday saying, yes, still okay for tomorrow. Maybe it would be good to pass comment on the European Super League that was just emerging and trying to comment. And I'm so grateful that we didn't record on the Monday, because we would have been about 10% of the way through the story of what was going on. So
we would have missed out on Mourinho. We would have missed out on Ed Woodward. We would have missed out on John Henry. We would have missed out on the whole collapse. We've missed out on absolutely everything. We would have just been like, what do you think of this thing, Mark? So yeah, I mean, look, but we're recording this on Wednesday evening. This is probably going to come out on Friday, and who knows what could happen in the next 24 hours. So apologies already, everyone, if we sound outdated. I think that's it's sort of important to say, but there's no way of keeping up with it, is there?
No, I mean,
we haven't even spoken about Mourinho. I haven't spoken to anyone about Mourinho being sacked, which, you know, 3 weeks ago, that would have been absolutely all we'd have been talking about. The backlog of my reading on football from this week, I still haven't read a thing about it, and yeah, I guess I'll look forward to doing that at some point. But yeah, it's all, it's a weird one, isn't it?
It's exhausting, isn't it? I mean, I haven't told you this, but I don't know whether this lands. And for those who have watched Game of Thrones, they will understand this. For those who haven't, apologies. So maybe stop, just pause it for now, or maybe skip a minute. But my analogy that I was thinking of the other day was how, you know, when I think Jamie Carragher almost said, like, this is bigger than all of us. No matter what your allegiance, we need to just sort of come together, call a truce. And it's almost like on Game of Thrones, where all of the houses are just like, right, obviously the White Walkers are coming. Let's just work together. So it's almost like, and I don't know whether this analogy has already been made, but it's just very quite salient in my head, that it's almost like the billionaire owners are the White Walkers. And
survive the long night.
Yeah, and we, as football fans of our respective clubs, are all the different houses, and we must all put our allegiances aside and work towards the common goal of defeating these White Walkers, these billionaires. So people can start listening again if you hadn't watched Game of Thrones. We're back to it. But that was my analogy, at least.
Absolutely fantastic.
Just a bit of fun.
Absolutely fantastic. And I think we've done our bit there by not sort of, I mean, there's no point in churning it all up again. So I think what we should do is move on to something we do know about, and that is football analytics. Let's do it. Okay, Mark, so enough with the topical chat. What we're going to do, we're going to go back to what you might call the original Fanalytics format. And we've got an analytical concept here, which I don't know anything about. You know stuff about, and I'm going to ask you to try and explain it. We're going to work through it. We're going to ask questions, and hopefully we bring out something that's quite interesting that some of our listeners may not have heard of before. And if you have heard stuff about it before, maybe you can use this as a good resource to sort of explain to other people. So Mark, without further ado, can you please explain to me, what are we talking about today on the Fanalytics podcast?
Very well introduced. It's like a drum roll.
I didn't rehearse that at all.
That was very good. Well, I guess off the back of last week, we're obviously talking about possession. It kind of got me thinking that, so obviously, there's more than one way to obviously play the game and to look to win the game. And we spoke about it in simple terms. Obviously, possession is the very essence of the game. But obviously, to sort of use possession, to think about possession, you have to have the ball. And it got me thinking more broadly about, you know, how the team dynamic works with the ball and without the ball. And it made me think about an advanced analytics term called pitch control. Now, it is sort of far more advanced than possession, where we spoke about it in very simple terms. And what I saw, again, want to caveat myself in saying that it's almost like we're not going to fully explain pitch control, because it's quite a nuanced, advanced analytics term. And there's some really good resources out there that we can link in the bio. But we're just going to introduce it for this episode, where people can just, you know, have a flavour of it and then kind of go and do a bit more further reading, as you mentioned. So, the term that we're going to speak about today is called pitch control.
excellent. I mean, disclaimer, I genuinely at the moment have no idea what pitch control is. It's not one I've heard before. You know, I'm sort of been introduced to analytics terms all the time. This isn't one I've come across very much, to be honest with you. So yeah, this is a complete blank canvas here to explain. So I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, let's see how we get on and see whether if you can't understand it or I'm not being clear, then just stop me as you go and we'll work through
it. I'll be like, can we talk about possession again, please?
I know, yeah. It all comes down to XG, put it that way, as everything else does. No, it doesn't.
Okay, good.
So if I try and put it in simple terms, so pitch control is essentially, I mean, the definition that's given is the probability that a player can control the ball, assuming it was at this location. So it's looking on a player level, but also a team level to see how much the team can kind of dominate the space on the pitch. So it looks to see if a ball were in a random location on the pitch, based on where the players are at that moment, who would get to it first?
Basically. So we're talking about positioning and shape here at the moment. We're not talking about in possession. We're just saying if the ball is in a certain location, based on the position of the players and the shape adopted, at whatever stage of play we're discussing, at that exact moment, how likely is it for a certain player to get to the ball?
Yeah, that's basically the crux of it. And there's multiple things and multiple factors which are considered to sort of answer that question, which we'll come on to, of, you know, simple things like the direction that the player is going towards, the speed that they are traveling in, to essentially answer, which individual player is most likely to get to the ball and which teams cover more of the pitch such that their players are able to reach the ball quicker than the opposition. So it's a way of sort of quantifying space. And I guess if you think about it, which is really well covered in, we'll come on to exactly who's sort of introduced it, but a nice way that I think about it is kind of just painting the pitch. So if you almost, at the start of the game, you've got, you know, the home team on the left, away team on the right. Let's say the home team are in red, the away team are in blue. The home team's covered in red for the first half of the pitch, away team covered in blue for their half of the pitch. Now, obviously, when the game starts, everything mixes together because everyone comes into close contact with each other and the ball's obviously flying around. It's a very dynamic movement throughout the game. But the idea for each individual team is to dominate the game, ideally. You know, obviously, we'll come into the tactical side of that, but to dominate the game or to at least be expansive so that they can have increased their likelihood of obviously winning the game. So the more of the pitch that you quote unquote paint, the more dominant you're likely to be in possession or the more likely you are to, you know, reach the ball. Does that kind of give a little bit of a flavor kind of visually? Because I guess the thing to say about this whole thing is that it's quite inherently visual as a topic, and as I say, we'll link some really useful resources in the bio, but it's a bit tricky to kind of explain in a podcast.
Well, to be honest, I think that's one of your better analogies, that one, mate. I enjoyed that, the painting one. I think that definitely works. I can totally visualize that, and the thought that once it starts, they start mixing it together. That's very helpful. So is this calculated like every minute? Does the picture change every minute, or does it matter who has the ball? A little bit more on how it works, I guess, is what I'm asking. Like, how is it constantly updated, and then how does it get to be the final picture? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, there's no almost like no such thing as kind of the final picture because it's happening in real time, and it uses tracking data, which I think we've spoken about before in terms of tracking data. And what essentially tracking data does is use a set of cameras. There's cameras all around the stadium, which looks at the position of every player on the pitch, the location of every player on the pitch, and the ball as well. And what it does is take snapshots of the pitcher 25 times per second for the full 90 minutes. 25 frames per second, exactly. So yep. You end up with millions and millions of data points, but it shows that it's these, as you would imagine, during football, everything's just changing and happening in real time. But what tracking data does is provide a kind of a bird's eye view of every player on the pitch at any one time, which kind of goes beyond what maybe even the TV cameras can do, because that obviously focuses more so on where the actual ball is. But it's just looking from a bird's eye perspective of where everyone is, and you can clearly see the, you know, the shape of each team and where every player is on the pitch. So It's really useful in that regard. And yeah, it's using tracking data. One thing I didn't mention at the start was exactly who kind of pioneered this work. And just as a quick and aside, it was sort of created by William Spearman, who is the lead data scientist at Liverpool Football Club. And we're not talking about this topic because it's to do with Liverpool Football Club and they are my team. I can assure you of that. But yeah, it's a sort of, as I say, an advanced data analytics term. And he came up with this in a previous role of his before he started at Liverpool. But he does a really good tutorial through the Friends of Tracking, which is a very useful resource, which I'm sure many people know about. And he gives a really good tutorial on that. So I think if we link that in the bio as well for those who haven't already seen it, then I'm sure he can explain it. I know that he can explain it far, far better than I can, but it's just sort of saying that was where it originated from.
Okay, cool. So that's where it originates from. And then I understand the tracking data. That's cool. So let's just make it clear. You've mentioned a couple of ways that it's sort of worked out. It's about the speed that players are moving. Am I right in thinking? Not just the distance they are from wherever the ball is dropped on the pitch. It's about the pace that they're moving at and what direction. And then the image that we're seeing is a changing thing by where the ball is on the pitch and how quickly, say you were looking at how quickly can the left back get to it if it's in the right midfielder's position, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why tracking data is such a, you know, dynamic source of information. Because, I mean, let's say that you and I are both stood next to each other on the halfway line.
Yeah.
And the ball is 10 meters in front of us. Now, we, as both stood next to each other, have an equal chance of reaching that ball because we're stood still, the ball is stood still. Obviously, during football, a football game, everything is moving all the time. So you have so many different factors that you're taking into account. So I might be running in one direction, you might be running in another one. You might be further away from the ball at that time, but you're running at a faster speed and you're running towards it. And I'm potentially jogging. I wouldn't be maybe jogging away from it because I'd know where the ball is, but I'm jogging and I'm not able to turn as quickly. So you might be further away from the ball, but reach it quicker. In which case, that space on the pitch, let's say it is in the, you know, the right back position or behind the right back position and you're the left winger, you're more likely to reach the ball there. So you have more control over that area of the pitch.
Okay.
So this is where, you know, at the team level, you're able to tactically dictate how much of the pitch you can control and how much space you can create in order to get into dangerous areas.
By the positions and the movements of the players, by this constant moving image that is happening because of the players' movements, it allows us to see how well you're sort of using the space and dominating the space. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and exactly that, yeah. And I mean, the masters of it, and we spoke about it last week in terms of possession, is, you know, the likes of Barcelona, especially obviously from, you know, the Pep Guardiola era. Man City obviously now are very good at it, where they're constantly moving at such speed and moving the ball and making sure that they're creating space really well, almost like the Dutch way of thinking as well, total football, is that they are maximizing the space really neatly and really well. So it's just a way essentially of quantifying that. And it shows it very visually, which is very hard to speak about on a podcast, which is why we'll link people to it. But you can almost see, based on the colour of where the area on the pitch, whether it's coloured, let's say, red or blue, then you can see which team is more likely to, you know, reach certain areas of the pitch. And if the ball were to land there, they would get to it first. And obviously you can dictate what that space will be as the team on the ball, in order to maybe suck the opposition in to then, you know, ultimately create a chance and try and score a goal.
I was going to say, because this is obviously something that isn't just about event data, but it is hugely sort of influenced by what the team do with the ball, isn't it? As to where it sort of lands. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and this is the thing where you spoke about it, painting it red and blue. You can have the whole of the area around the goalkeeper is more likely than not, for the blue team, let's say, going to be painted blue. Because he's got a lot, he's more likely to get to it than anyone else. But that's not a very lucrative area if you're the team who's trying to score, to pass it back to your own goalkeeper. So there's obviously certain areas of the pitch, like we said with possession, that you could just pass it between two defenders all day.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's the context, again, adding it layer by layer. And there's many things which is mentioned in William Spearman's sort of tutorial, that there's far more context and different models and advanced methods to add to it the context of where that location of the ball is absolutely key. So there's obviously, it's more lucrative towards, you know, the attacking box than your own defensive box. So just because you quote unquote paint more of the pitch or have more control over the pitch, a lot like having more possession, doesn't mean that you're actually more dominant in terms of winning the game. It just gives an idea of, you know, what the situation is as it's in real time. And then you add on more and more context to then understand then how you can maximize that space to obviously try and score a goal.
Yeah. I'm glad I clarified the who has possession and what they do with it point, because I had in my head an image of like a huge table football, a human size foosball, where the ball just got dropped in from above and then people had to run towards it and see who got there first. So I'm glad that see what kind of wavelength I'm on here, Mark.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do you remember, like, if you play foosball and then you cheat a little bit and you drop it towards your own players?
Yeah, you just got one big giant who just drops it into the stadium from afar. Yeah, not quite that. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing as well. Obviously, the team who has possession of the ball is more able to obviously dictate the subsequent location of the ball because they have it. But then, so that's one thing. But then obviously the defending team is able to, again, use space and try and condense the pitch to make the pitch as small as possible to gather around the opposition and obviously try and win it back as well. So it's just as useful for on the ball kind of possession and off the ball movement within the team with possession, but also useful in off the ball movement of, you know, setting pressing triggers that we've spoken about before and having the sort of a defensive tactic. So it's just so useful. Tracking data is just so useful. It's a real goldmine, but it's quite difficult to kind of get your hands on publicly, and it's very, very complex. And there's just so many data points that it's like football analytics in general. It's very much in its infancy, you know, in the grand scheme of things of how much information can be obviously extracted from it. The likes of Liverpool and the research team at Liverpool Football Club are very, very good at being able to extract that key information there. And many other clubs use it to an advanced level, but to mere mortals like you and I, it's tricky.
But I'm not even going to begin to ask you how they work it out, like the technicalities of it. I can only dream. But yeah, it's very interesting stuff. Very interesting.
Okay, Ryan, I have got a quote which I actually sourced for this episode, which I thought was quite relevant to what we're talking about today. And it comes from Johan Cruyff.
Oh, well, I'll definitely enjoy it then.
Exactly, yeah, who I know we've spoken about many times for the sort of tactical element. And it's a well-known phrase of his, but he said, if you have the ball, you must make the field as big as possible. And if you don't have the ball, you must make it as small as possible. And I think we sort of kind of alluded to that in terms of that it ultimately comes down to pitch control, in that if you do have possession of the ball, you want to maximize how much you can control. You need to spread out and make sure that you can get to sort of any area on the pitch and dictate the play. And obviously then if you, almost like an army in formation, when you haven't got the ball, you need to make sure that you're very regimented and the ball doesn't get, you know, get through you. And very compact, exactly. So I guess that's the crux of pitch control. Cruyff was very ahead of his time.
Well, he was, wasn't he?
He absolutely was, yeah.
That's a really interesting point then. So I guess that leads me on to something I was wondering as well. Is this something that coaches and managers and technical staff, even on the sidelines when a game is going on, is this a kind of model that they'll have their eye on and almost be saying, well, look at that part of the pitch, we need to tell so-and-so to get in that area because there's a gaping hole there? Or, you know, to look at the team shape as a whole and to see where there are gaps or where there are missed opportunities. Do you know what I mean? Is it the kind of thing that gives them an overview to be able to tactically analyse that their own shape at that time? I guess it's that bird's eye view thing, isn't it? That from the dugout, they don't necessarily have.
Yeah, very true. And you sometimes get coaches who like to go into the stands and see things from, you know, further up so they can get a really clear view of the, you know, the whole pitch. But yeah, with access to data and technology, they're able to do that. In real time. And yes, they do use it in game and within the matches, but there's an element of, there's a bit of a lag as to how much and how quickly the information is fed from actually what's happening to obviously their computer. So there's that element to it, which is just obviously a logistical one. But yeah, in principle, that absolutely is used from a tactical perspective. And it kind of comes back to the thing that we always say in the episodes of that so what element, right? Like I've spoken about, okay, if the ball were to be in any location, the pitch, who's more likely to get it? Very, you know, very general, but what's the point? And this is where it kind of comes into that from a training perspective and from a tactical perspective. And yeah, making sure that you maximize that space and you're more likely to obviously use that pitch control to maximize your chance of scoring. So yes, it is used in decision making, and there's a few ways that we can talk about it, I guess. There's a couple of examples.
Well, decision making, from my mediocre analytical knowledge, is surely something that's quite hard to put your finger on, because in that moment, to be able to know what a player should do within split seconds of things happening around them is quite a hard thing to analytically look at, I would imagine. But this, out of many of the things that we've spoken about, seems to be something that indicates a way of almost an overview to say, well, actually, at this, there's a space over there that would be a better option than the space over here. I'm moving my hands, which listeners can't see.
Here and there is fine.
Here and there. They're very two different places. But do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it just adds that other layer of context, because again, with event data, you can say that a player made, I don't know, X number of passes or back passes. And you're like, okay, well, they're a safe player. But you don't know that they're being closed down and the pitch is being condensed a lot. And their best option is to keep possession, is to pass it to another area that's maybe behind them, but in order to eventually, you know, advance the play. So it gives that reason as to why certain players are making those decisions, rather than the event data just saying this is what has already happened. And it focuses, the event data obviously focuses on, for the most part at least, you know, individual actions, whereas the tracking data, obviously, again, it says why those actions were actually made, and where, as you say, exactly that, why there could have been a better option or why that was the best option. So and it's something where you can obviously appraise that after the game, at the player level, where let's say that there's someone in the left back position, let's say Zinchenko for Manchester City, and he maybe had a lucrative ball that he could have played through the lines, because let's say Gabriel Jesus was making a really good run that was really maximising that space in behind. And Zinchenko chose to play a pass back to Edison, the goalkeeper. Now, that could be maybe used to appraise Zinchenko's decision-making, so at an individual level, but it also could be that at a team level, Manchester City weren't giving Zinchenko enough options and weren't maximising the space more generally in order to maybe get out of a difficult situation. So their team shape wasn't actually very conducive to allowing him to make a better pass and to eventually work the chance, up the pitch. So it's really useful for decision making at an individual level and also at a team level.
Basically, no longer a coach just shouting, "He's got no options, lads." They've got actual ways to be able to show it and what the options were. It all comes back to this thing we've mentioned a few times. There's nowhere to hide as a player, is there anymore? Even your decision making is questioned constantly. 25 frames per second worth of your decisions are just constantly under review. Yeah.
You can just imagine at the Sunday league level, just someone like, get that pitch control. On that tablet now.
Get the thigh pad. Get pitch control.
You said you had no options on. Let me get that pitch control.
Let me get that screenshot of that exact moment. Yeah. I guess my final question on it, because this has been absolutely fascinating, and I think that, of the many concepts and stuff we've discussed, this is one of the more advanced ones in my mind. Certainly, this has been quite a good one to get my head around. So is there like a final overview at the end of the game, for instance, almost like an average heat map maybe or something? Is there a kind of a final pitch control image, painting your Picasso image that we've mentioned about? Is there a final one that takes all the average data or something along those lines?
I understand what you're saying. In terms of, would there be something like a summary stat? But no, I think because obviously it's such a, the definition of tracking data is that it's just so dynamic that it really depends on the situation in that split second almost, that it is just so dynamic all the time. And even a bit like we said about possession before, even if it does say that throughout the game, this team actually had more pitch control than the other team, it really tells very little about as to which team actually had a higher likelihood of winning the game, because it may be that, you know, the team was happy to let the other team have a lot of the pitch control in order to stay really compact and then obviously just suddenly shoot to score the goal on the break. And we've spoken about that before, and it does come back to expected goals, of course, of just having higher chances rather than maybe dominating the pitch. But one thing I want to say before we go is sort of mention about the layers of context that you can sort of add to it. And I think the key one, which we kind of touched upon with that Zinchenko example, is obviously the context of having the ball and putting the ball into higher quality areas and looking at the opportunity to score. And that was exactly what William Spearman added this extra model to, of it was called a scoring opportunity model. So uses the distance to goal as a key factor of actually measuring this scoring opportunity. So I guess it's much like we've spoken about in previous episodes, actually, with possession value in a previous episode, and expected threat, which, if people haven't heard of it, then we'd encourage them to listen to our other episodes on
that. Good plug.
Yeah, managed to get one in there. But it's kind of the same thing where, obviously, speaking about pitch control and, you know, who's more likely to get to the ball in certain areas, you can almost then add a value to wherever the ball is on the pitch and wherever all the players are on the pitch, what areas are going to be higher percentage chances to scoring a goal if the ball were to then go in there. So this is why it's really useful to think about this as of off the ball movement. The player doesn't have to be in possession of the ball for this to be really useful, in that you could maybe just at a moment in time, obviously it changes, to see where on the pitch there could be a really kind of dense area on the pitch that if the ball were to be played in there very, very quickly, you suddenly increase your chances of scoring really highly. So this again sort of shows how you can pull teams from left to right in order to make this certain space and have it as almost a tactical thing that you train, where we, you know, that's how it can be applied on the training ground to open up a really lucrative area, pull the centre back to one side across the pitch and open up a really clear area, which is quantified using this space to say that, okay, currently, as we've spoken about with possession value in the past, currently the ball is in a location where the chances of scoring is 1%. Now, if you were to put the ball in this area on the pitch, which is lighting up on the pitch control it's pinging off on the colour of it. If you play that ball into this area, which we know our team will be able to get to first, because the pitch control says that the whole point of it is that, if the ball lands here, we will get to it first. If you put the ball in this area, then it really shoots up our chances of, you know, creating a chance or scoring a goal. So it goes from 1% to, let's say, 7%, which is a really massive increase. So knowing that and using this information, we can then start to use it as part of our, you know, tactical setup. So again, the applications, the so what element, the context, is there's absolutely loads of them using this using this model. So
fascinating.
As I say, hopefully just a bit of a flavor from us just to at least begin to explain it. But I'll definitely include some links in the bio if for those who are interested in it and just want to know more, because There's far better resources than my explanation to be able to get more information.
Well, I thought you did a cracking job, mate, and I thought that was very interesting. Top work. Okay, Mark, top stuff as always. Something that's just occurred to me is that look at me talking about pitch control, advanced analytics, when I don't know if listeners would have seen this on our Twitter earlier this week. I posted a picture of the original message that I sent to you, Mark, on the 19th of April 2020, pitching the idea, why don't we just collaborate and do something? I want to hop on this clever football bandwagon you've got going on. And check us out a year later, we're recording an episode talking about pitch control. So that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was your pitch a year ago. That was your pitch to me to say. So that was your pitch control of some sorts, I guess we could sort of segue.
There was no control in the pitch. It was an absolute stab in the dark. I want to hop on this clever football thing I always ask you questions about. But
What though? I didn't realize that it was April, as in it felt like it was far later in the year, obviously, I think, by the time we'd actually recorded and got things all set up. But it's crazy to think that it was a year ago. How things have changed in that time.
Well, it probably took us about 4 weeks to record the first episode with just thinking, well, we don't actually know what we're doing, whereas now we just talk and it seems to come out. And people seem to like it. So anyway, hopefully many more years and many more pitch anniversaries to come.
Hopefully so, yeah. We're episode 32 now, and it was just crazy to even get one in the can. So yeah, thanks again to all the listeners for sticking with us this long.
For sticking with us. And also another thank you for the questions, feedback and messages that we received recently. We've had some lovely comments from people on Twitter and Instagram. We've also had lots of lovely emails. So as we do every week, Mark, we're going to remind people where they can do those things.
Where can they find us?
Where can you find us? So you can email us at... Oh my God, I've done the wrong one. This won't make the cut. You can email us at fanalytics.pod@gmail.com, or you can find us on social media. We are at fanalyticspod. We are hoping to get through more of the messages and questions that people have sent us in, so thank you so much for doing that. In the meantime, we hope you've enjoyed this week's episode, and we will see you next time.
Podcast Network.